Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions and the law. My name is Matthew Kurbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. In this episode, I interview Mark Stiving. Mark is the founder of Impact Pricing and is a pricing expert. While not a pricing expert for subscription legal services, because who is, really, he provides a wealth of valuable knowledge for those of us thinking carefully about how to price our legal services using a subscription and flat fees. Mark also has a podcast called Impact Pricing, and I've become a dedicated listener since learning so much from him during this interview. I'm releasing videos of my podcast to all my Substack subscribers now, so go to lawsubscribe.com and join the Substack using the form on the homepage. I'm speaking at ABA Tech Show in Chicago this February of 2024, where I'll be presenting on generative AI and the subscription model and podcasting for lawyers. Register at techshow.com. Thanks as always to my sponsors, 650 and Gavel. Links to both in the show notes. More on them later. And remember to use the code LawSubscribed when signing up. It lets them know you found out about them from the podcast. You get 10% off, and it really supports the show. Another way to support the show is to share it with someone you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode. Mark Stiving, welcome to the Law Subscribed podcast.
All right. Thank you, Matt. This is going to be fun.
I'm so happy to have you here. I discovered you through a past guest of the show, Robbie Kelman Baxter, and so thrilled to have heard you on her podcast. And I've been listening to her podcast forever, but not everyone who goes on her podcast would make a great guest for my listeners of attorneys who want to change the way that they're practicing law. But as soon as I heard what you were all about, I knew you'd make a great guest for the pod. So with that, Mark, go ahead and just give yourself a little introduction for my listeners.
Sure. I've been interested in pricing since I was 12 years old. How's that? I recall going to the grocery store with my mom and seeing prices that ended in nines, right? 69, 99. And I always wondered, why do companies do that? Do they think we're stupid? Right? We know 99 is a dollar. What's the big deal? About 20 years later, I was in a doctoral program at UC Berkeley, and I had a chance to play with scanner panel data, which is the data that grocery stores use when you use your loyalty card. They collect that data. And so I could statistically test, does 9 cents work or not? Turns out it does. Works because we are lazy subtractors. Now, I became addicted to understanding how people use prices to make decisions. And then the next logical step is, okay, great. How is it that companies can take advantage of that or use that knowledge when they make their own business decisions, whether it's pricing or any other types of business decisions?
I absolutely love it. And the fact that you've been interested from such a young age, like, is part of the most fascinating thing. Now, we've talked a lot on this podcast about how many options, for example, to price, right? And I don't want to scare away any of the lawyers who went to law school because they didn't want to do math. This is not going to be a math-heavy episode. Just because Mark is a pricing expert doesn't mean that we're going to be doing a lot of math. So don't run. Stay tuned. Maybe slow it down from 2x speed to 1x speed, because there will be numbers mentioned in this episode. But something that we've talked about before is how many options to put on the website for choices of the maybe 20 lawyers out there who are doing innovative pricing and actually putting it on their website. And we've generally come down to 2 or 3, but no more than 3 and not just 1. And that's a lot of just osmosis of learning. But you're the pricing expert. So maybe, Mark, you could tell us why you want to have only so many options or even any options at all on the website if you're going to list your prices.
Absolutely. Boy, there's like 100 different answers I want to give you with that one question. But let's start with this. You should have 3. I like to use the word choices. So you should have good, better, best. And then I save the word options to mean I'm going to have an option on top of that. So maybe I'll sell something else above and beyond my good, better, best choices or versions of my product. Now, the reason that you want 3 is, first off, confused buyers don't buy. So if you put a whole bunch of versions out there, people are trying to figure, oh, what's right for me? What do I need to do? And they essentially get confused enough and they're afraid to make a mistake. So they choose nothing, right? Mm-hmm. It's easier to choose nothing. The second reason you want 3 is, again, because people are afraid to make a mistake. And when you have 3, most people will buy the one in the middle. And the reason they're going to buy the one in the middle is because they're afraid if they buy the cheap one, it's not good enough. And if they buy the expensive one, they're wasting money. And in both of those cases, they're making a mistake. So they don't want to make a mistake. So they buy the one in the middle. Now, experts, if someone's truly an expert, they buy exactly what they need. Mm-hmm. But most people aren't experts when they first go buy a new product, a new service. And so therefore, they're using that choice set that we give them to help them make a smart decision. So I highly recommend three versions of your product. We'll call them good, better, best. I think of good as the least expensive version that you could create that would solve the customer's problem, but maybe not phenomenally well. Better is probably exactly what they need. And then best is pretty much everything we do. I want to use that almost as an advertisement to say, here are the things I'm capable of doing if you ever want to go full bore with me.
Yeah, that's great. And we've had some guests on the podcast that have done that, where they're niching down in their practice area and offering subscription packages. So that seems to be where that works really well. I think of the food lawyer, where he just represents businesses in the agricultural food distribution chain, Provider Legal, who just represents small medical practices, right? Like, those are fantastic examples of that kind of thing. I'm going to give you mine, Mark, which is a little bit different. I'll just give you a little bit of background, and we'll see what your pricing expert brain comes up with as a result of this. So since I guess even before we get there, tell us the difference. I heard you say this on Robbie's podcast. Tell us the difference between ending in a 9 versus ending in a 0. Why does that make a difference from the consumer standpoint?
So first off, every single lawyer had better be ending their prices at 0s and not in 9s. Otherwise, I'll have to come shoot you. Here's the big difference. A 9 says it's a good price or a good deal. And a 0 implies high quality. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to go buy a new car, a new expensive fancy car, you do not want to spend $99,000 on a new car. You want to tell your friends you spent $100,000 on a new car. On the other hand, if you're going to buy a very inexpensive new car, there's nothing at all wrong with buying a $29,000 car. And in fact, $30,000 looks a lot more expensive than $29,000. So unless you want to be known as the cheap lawyer, I would highly recommend you use 0s.
This is part of the reason why I brought you on the show, Mark, because I agree with you, but I'm about to challenge your thinking, and here's why. Every lawyer does do that, and their price is, you know, X amount per hour, $250 an hour, $300 an hour, $500 an hour, $1,000 an hour. There is no target of lawyers, Walmart for lawyers, or anything like that. So right now you have only competition in the high-priced space. So when I designed my law firm, Subscription Attorney LLC, I'm only a solo licensed in Illinois, I decided I was going to play in a blue ocean because there are no lawyers who are pricing for budget, because there's a massive market opportunity for people who want to pay for legal services but either are too scared because of the billable hour, or they don't know if they could afford it. Or they could afford something, but since lawyers who bill by the hour don't know what they're going to ultimately charge them, these people shy away. So there's massive market opportunity here. So I decided I was going to play with that, and I start my pricing at $19.99 a month. I usually just say $20 a month. Like, if I'm getting up and I'm speaking, I'll say subscriptions start at $20 a month, $50 a page. But when they go to my website, they do see $19.99 a month, $49.99 a page. Because every lawyer charges premium prices. So if I'm already charging less, I do want to signal to them, this is your more affordable option. And if you want the most expensive lawyer and the highest premium lawyer product out there, you could go pay $250 an hour or more. There's no shortage of those lawyers. What do you think about that?
So I did say I was going to have to shoot you for that. Well, but I have to say, in all honesty, it's a good strategy if you don't mind being known as the low-cost lawyer. Mm-hmm. And most services are not low-cost, are not low-end. So I have nothing at all wrong with that, given that you know where you've positioned your business.
Yeah, and I think because I've now started, as a result of this podcast, I never planned on it. I'm a practicing lawyer first, but I have been teaching other lawyers how to do subscriptions for their law firms. That's a very narrow thing, right? Like, I'm not a pricing expert. I'm not a getting business expert, right? but I teach them how to do the subscription for a law practice. And a lot of them, I shouldn't say a lot of them because I've only done a handful so far, but the majority are more interested in premium pricing still, right? I think there's still market opportunity for, I'm a premium lawyer, but you're going to know what you're going to pay me versus who knows with the billable hour. So with that sort of in mind, like why is value pricing or having a product pricing, productizing services maybe better than billing hours?
Oh my gosh, there's a ton of reasons. The question is, what do you think are your most important reasons? I would say my favorite reason is that when you bill by the hour, you and your client are not aligned in your objectives. Your client wants you to work less or bill less hours, and you want to work more and bill more hours. And so you've built a conflict into the relationship just by the way you're doing pricing, which is really tough. Secondly, when you bill by the hour, what you've essentially said to the client is, you take all the risk, I'm not taking any risk. And in business, we get paid to take risk. So if I could do a project and I say, look, on average, it takes me 20 hours to do a project like this. And so I'm gonna quote the equivalent of 25 hours or 30 hours, but I'm gonna make it a fixed price. And if I can get it done in 10, look at how much money I just made. And every once in a while, it actually takes me 50 hours, like 60 hours. Like, okay, I lost money on that one, but I make so much more money on the ones that I do well, and we're building product. This is no different than selling a product. And if I sold you a product and it had a relatively low margin, I'm making money on every one I sell. And then you return one. And the cost of handling the return, I lost money on you.
Right.
So what? I made money on all of these other clients. So the question becomes, can we price it in a way that seems really fair, where we're making money on all of our clients? And occasionally we lose money on one. We get it. But that's us taking the risk, and we should get paid to take risk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting point, and it makes me think about the most pushback we get, those of us who are pushing for a subscription or value billing in legal services, is what about litigation? Because I don't know how many depositions there are going to be. I don't know all the things that are going to happen and how long things are going to take. And so there have been some attorneys who are doing like segmented fees. So, you know, up to the first mediation, which in certain states you're required to mediate family law, there's a set price, right? And then after that is where you do all the expensive discovery, and there's like a per deposition. So segmented fees, although it still is like a lot for a consumer or a client to process, right? Like all these different numbers, right? So something that I've come up with that I've devised, I'm curious to see what you have to say on it, is a subscription plus flat fee, where you have X amount of maybe a few thousand dollars to start, several hundred or a lower $1,000 amount per month as the case progresses, and then basic success fees based on, did we mediate and settle the case? Did we settle it right before trial? How many days or weeks of trial? And then there's like set fees for that type of thing. But all the while, if things take longer than you thought they were, you're still getting that monthly subscription throughout, right? So you get a flat fee up front, subscription throughout, and then flat fee every day or week or with a settlement or something like that. So what do you think about that type of structure, or what does that get the gears turning for you for how do you solve for these unknowns of litigation to really get rid of the billable hour in those types of situations?
Yeah. So one thing I want to talk about real quickly is the difference between, I'll call it value-based pricing or project pricing, and subscription pricing. Both of those are getting rid of hourlies, right? I don't need the hourly pricing in order to do either of those, subscription or project-based pricing. And so if we just focus on project pricing, or I think that's what you're referring to when you say value-based pricing. Mm-hmm. If we just focus on value-based pricing, then what we have to be able to do is scope the job relatively well to say, this is what's going to happen. And so if we've been through a specific experience enough times, we can say, here's what we expect to have happen. So we're going to go bid on this job. Now, you could still put boundaries around it. You can still say, look, I do three depositions. I do, I show up on court four times. Right. And so we've got our boundaries around what it is we're going to do. And there's nothing wrong with that. And then we could have an extra fee or an extra set of fees and say, look, when we go beyond this, this is what it's going to look like. Here's what I think it's going to be for you, though. So we can make this happen. So I think that's very reasonable. Now, the idea of getting a monthly payment, which you called a subscription, while we're in the middle of the job, I kind of like that, right? It's kind of like saying, hey, if we get this thing closed quickly, you could stop paying me. But as long as I'm thinking about it on a regular basis, you're going to pay me money.
Yeah. And I think that helps, especially when you have like a higher success fee. So like, for example, I'll give you an actual example of a case that I did, which was a commercial real estate transaction. They wanted to close in a certain amount of days. They wanted to close in 45 days from when they brought me on. So we structured it. So it was like every 9 days, I made $1,000, but I will make $10,000 when we close. So I'll make more money if we could close sooner. And so I was going to make that $10,000 one way or another. And then if we went longer than the 45 days, there was like a different sort of penalty set up to try to incentivize like the $10,000. Otherwise, the $10,000 starts to go down, right? So there was an incentive to get to that closing because I'm going to make more money sooner if we could close sooner than 45 days. So that type of a thing. And, you know, I'm still very new in this space. I mean, I've been trying to innovate on the billable hour personally. The podcast helps because I'm meeting lawyers who are doing things in their own unique ways. So that was like a quick solve, pricing problem solved to a situation that was brought to me where I never priced that kind of a thing before. How did I do? What grade would you give me?
I think that was really good. That was very interesting. What we're after, and by the way, you were going to get 10,000 no matter what, right? If you closed it after 1 week or after 9 weeks, you're going to get 10,000. So it doesn't matter.
But also there was a lot of work to do up to that point. And so it was hard to know exactly how many things we were going to do. And it ended up that there was like the property was in commercial foreclosure. So like there ended up being a lot more work, but I was making 1,000 every 9 days, and I would have been paid the 10,000. I would have been paid 10,000 when we closed. So I could have technically, if I were to be incentivized to stretch it out, I might've made a little bit more money. But I would have made a lot more money in the short term by closing it, by having that sweetened pot to try to close it on that. Do you know what I mean?
I don't understand how you would have made more money because you're going to make that $10,000 no matter what.
I was still getting paid $1,000 a day, $1,000 every 9 days.
Yep. So if you'd gone 45 days, you would have gotten what, $5,000 plus $10,000, you'd have gotten $15,000.
Right. That was the most they wanted to spend. So that was how I structured the deal. So if I closed it in 9 days short, it would, and then it was prorated per day if we closed within the 49 days, but it was paid at every 9 day interval, the $1,000. So, but ultimately, like I felt, and they felt, the client felt that they were, that was a sufficient incentive for me to also try to get to the closing table sooner, even though technically if it didn't go the full 45 days, I would have made maybe a little bit more money, but that 10K was sweet enough of a pot that if I could close sooner, I just get that 10K sooner. And there's an opportunity cost of getting it sooner, having a happy client. They'll use me for the next transaction. Do you know what I'm saying?
I understand. So from a pure pricing perspective, meaning I want to capture the most my client's willing to pay, I would have structured it the opposite way that you did.
Okay.
And I would have I would have said, look, I tell you what, it's $20,000 if I close it in the first week. And every week I go late, it's $1,000 less. And when we get to the end, right, at 45 days, it's, you know, there's my $10,000, there's my $15,000, whatever it happens to be, right, that we end up on the other end. And so that way, the client says, look, you are incentivized to work really fast, get this done quickly, because I want it done quickly. And by the way, you're incentivized. So you've now aligned your incentives with your clients. When you charged $1,000 per week, that is really similar to charging an hourly rate that says, look, I really want to drag this on because I get paid more. And they're like, no, get it done quickly because I get to pay you less.
Yeah. See, this is, I was missing the pricing expert at the time from that. And I happened to get them to agree. So, I mean, they did agree.
Yeah. But, great.
But I do see what you're saying is I could have even potentially earned more if I did the reverse, and the value would have been easier to sell to them that we're able to close in 2 weeks. you know, so pay me the extra $5,000 kind of a thing from the original 15 if we could close in 2 weeks. So I do like that. That's really interesting.
Doing pricing. The thing that I'm always focused on is what's valuable to my customer. Mm-hmm. Where's the value to my client? And when you say the client has to close in 45 days, that to me says that's where all the value is, right? We got to get this deal done in 45 days. And so they would pay you a lot of money to make that happen. In fact, they'd probably pay more money to make it happen sooner because it takes angst away and, you know, nervousness.
Right. Great insights. Another thread that I wanted to pull that you mentioned earlier is when people are picking the prices, if you give them that three, then they could pick the center price because they're not experts. Most people, this is like goes back to me, like I'm marketing to the latent legal market. They've never hired a lawyer before. They are definitely not experts. But even those who have hired lawyers before are not necessarily experts, right? Especially since the billable hour is so opaque that unless they've been in a lot of litigation, so like insurance companies, debt collectors, you know, foreclosure banks who are foreclosing, like they have the data, they could kind of see and they could play with price there. But most people or small businesses hiring lawyers are not experts in pricing. I would even go so far to say most lawyers are not experts in their own pricing. So then how do you, is something that you teach, like also just like, how do you communicate that to the non-experts? Maybe because a lot of my clients, they see all my pricing on my website, but they still like to have that 15-minute intro call just to make sure it's a good fit. And they ask me pricing and I try in that 15 minutes, try to bridge that knowledge gap the best that I can. And I have a pretty good conversion rate on those. Plus, I'm only charging $20 a month-to-month subscription. So, I mean, you know, it's sort of a no-brainer once they talk to me. But what would be some of your recommendations for beyond just the pricing on the website? How do you help the people that aren't experts in the pricing?
I teach this to non-lawyers most of the time. Rarely do I speak to lawyers. But what I always do is I take these same concepts and I apply them across different industries or different situations. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I say all the time is nobody cares about your product. And so if I'd love to go look at your website right now, because if I looked at the pricing page and it says, you know, I do 3 depositions, I do 2 interviews, I do, you know, this is your product. And can I tell you, nobody cares. Absolutely. What they care about is they came to you with a problem. And you need to find a way to articulate what you do as a solution to their problem. And so I typically tell people, look, if you've got a product or you've got a set of features, you built those features because it solves a problem for a customer. Can you articulate that problem? And then what's the result the customer is going to get if they have that problem and they use your solution? Mm-hmm. So can we come up with some result? And now in our marketing and the way we talk about it, we should always be talking about problems and results, right? I'm not an expert in your industry at all, but I can imagine a problem. If I'm going to subscribe to your business, a problem is occasionally I have legal questions and I don't know who to go to for answers. Like, great, I solved that problem, right?
That is kind of what it is. It's like my model is like fractional in-house counsel for small business owners, freelancers, solopreneurs, and everyday people for whatever their sections of problems are. And in the same way that an in-house attorney at a business cannot solve all the legal problems of that business, they will occasionally have to take that to a specialized outside counsel. I will have to recommend you need an IP attorney, you need a criminal defense attorney, right? We need, if this is going to go before the EEOC or to litigation, I don't do that. We're going to need a litigator, right? And so I can then liaise with those other attorneys on behalf of the client. So really my promise is, and I went over this with Robbie a little bit, and I actually bought the domain to offloadlegal.com. It was available, is you offload all your legal to me. So you, the small business owner, you take off that legal hat that you wear as a small business owner, because now whenever there's a legal anything, you come to me. So we avoid problems. I'm not selling you problem solving. I'm selling you problem avoiding, because I'm not charging you by the hour. So whenever there's your commercial lease is coming up. Well, first of all, if I've been your attorney for long enough, I'm going to tell you your commercial lease is coming up. But that's actually where I get a lot of clients. Their commercial lease is coming up, or they're moving buildings. And so they need an attorney to help them with that. And they could pay $20 a month, $50 a page, but commercial leases are like 20 to 50 pages, depending on it. So it actually might make sense for them to sign up at my higher subscription packages where I stop counting pages and I only count projects, which I prefer because then I have more guaranteed monthly recurring revenue and annual recurring revenue, even if it's going to take me more work. But I'm using artificial intelligence and I'm using all these sorts of tech tools and automations where I'm not drafting things or doing anything from scratch. So I'm okay with that because I want that. So very quickly, I'm able to sell the value of $50 a page seems like a good deal. But when you're sending me hundreds of pages, it actually becomes very expensive. So like that's like what my promise is. Some of these other attorneys are doing it in a little bit of a different way. So what are your thoughts on that? When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional-only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high-quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form and scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show.
Yeah. So the one thing I want to come back to is you said you're not solving problems, but you actually are, right? I am not going to give you money unless you're solving a problem for me. Mm-hmm. So the problem that you're solving is knowing where to go to get the real problem solved, right? Or to get the deeper problem solved. And so you are solving problems for your clients. If you can learn to articulate it in the way that resonates with them, because they're going to come to you and say, I've got this problem. I don't know how to go solve my legal problems. I don't know where to go for legal issues. Great. That's a problem. I could solve that for you, right? And when we can articulate that in a way that truly resonates with them, then it's easier for us to get business. When we create our good, better, best packaging now, we want to create that packaging and the explanation around which of these problems are we solving? How well are we solving those problems? What are the results you might expect as we put that together?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the problem I'm solving for my clients in particular is you are dealing with legal stuff and you're like for my business owners or even the solopreneurs, you're negotiating your contracts. You're the one who's having to do the research on the legal things when like an employment thing comes up. What does work for hire mean in this contract that you've been given as a solopreneur, right? What are these things? So you no longer have to worry about that. You offload all of that legal stuff onto me and I'm going to take care of that for you. And because you're subscribed to me, I'm going to get to know you. I'm going to get to know your business and I'll be able to solve those problems for you as soon as they arise instead of you signed the contract and now there's a potential breach or they sent you a cease and desist and now you don't know what to do. So we're going to avoid all those big problems by solving little tiny problems as they come up. But you don't know their problems, but I know their problems. That's far too wordy to put on a website, Mark. But like that's sort of the idea of what I'm still workshopping it at every single speaking engagement I do. Like I come up with a different way to phrase it. But like offloading your legal to me has been like a somewhat of a resonant thing so far for me over these last few months.
Yep. So do you mind if I coach you a little bit?
Let's do it, because then the listeners are going to hear some actual coaching, so they'll know, well, I want that too. So then, and we're going to tell them where to find you at the end. So we could do a little sneak peek of some coaching from Mark. Yes, please. Let's do it. I could take it, Mark. I could take it. Please.
Are you sure? Okay. No crying, no tears. Okay, no worries. So when I do a problem, I always do it using first person language. Mm-hmm. When you describe the problem to me, You had a really hard time separating out your solution from what you thought they wanted and what you wanted to deliver. And so I would challenge you to say the following words. Think about any one of your customers, I don't care who it is, and say, I have a problem and my problem is, and then what's the problem that you solve? By the way, you get a sentence. So just give me an example of one problem.
I have this commercial lease that's about to expire, and I don't know if I should renegotiate or find a new place.
Okay. So I'll say that that's written in, so you said it in first person format, which I loved, but what it doesn't do is it doesn't resonate with me yet, mm-hmm. right? So what we're looking for is a problem where if I were to say that back to someone, they go, oh God, yes, I got that problem.
So yeah. And that is because you have to get very specific to do that, right? And like my promise, like my solution, my problem solving my problem avoidance that I try to sell is very broad. Usually clients will come to me when it's like their problem is, I was just presented with this contract and I have no freaking clue what it means or what to do, or should I sign it or should I not sign it? But a contract is such a broad thing, right? I've done employment contracts, severance agreements. I've done dog groomer agreements, like event vendor contracts where like a business wants to put on a holiday party and they're presented with a contract, right? Like commercial leases, like you name it, right? I've seen the wide gambit. So I know I have to be more specific in my marketing, but I do have a very hard time being so specific because I'm a generalist attorney, which is a rare thing these days.
So the question becomes, how do we make it sound specific while still being general? Mm-hmm. And what we really care about isn't the specifics as much as it's the emotion. I really want emotion in that problem statement. So let me give you a problem statement that might work for you. And then we can tweak it some more if you want. But I have a lease agreement coming up. I'm not a lawyer and don't understand most of what's in here right now. How do I even start making a decision?
Yeah. I think that is an experience that a lot of small business owners who have like a commercial lease will feel.
Even if it's not a commercial lease, you could say the exact same words with everything else, right? Mm-hmm. I have this contract I need to sign. I'm not a lawyer. I don't understand most of the words that are in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, nowadays people are like copying and pasting it into ChatGPT and saying, what does this mean? What should I do? And even though ChatGPT says, I'm not a lawyer, this isn't substitute for legal advice, you know, they think that they could get there and figure it out on their own. I mean, so much of my business model is built around the price itself. Like people will ask me, well, what is my niche? And really my niche, like, is my business model, right? And I think that while most lawyers are still billing time, those of us who are innovating on the billing practices, that can be a valuable niche. So like for me, when I explain like there's no hidden secrets or anything, my engagement agreement's on my website, it's actually only $20 a month and $50 a page. Usually I see the people, even though it's right on my website, Mark, people like take a deep breath and they're like, okay, so like there's no hidden prices. I'm not locked in for more than 1 month at a time. No, you're not. And they're like, okay, I could try this out. So like that seems to be for me, and this might be just the point in time that we're in this industry with like price certainty that simply doesn't exist for the rest of the market. So I almost or is it a mistake to lean too much into that than the problem solving aspect of it?
So I would argue that even with your pricing model, you are solving a problem, mm-hmm. right? The fact that you want to talk about it, it's the price uncertainty,
right?
People know they're going to need legal help, but I have no idea how much it's going to end up costing me. I think this is an affordable solution.
Yeah. Price uncertainty is the problem that I'm solving, right?
With the business model.
With the business model. And that's what the other, you know, my listeners and the guests that I've had on the podcast, that's what they're doing in their space. There's a nonprofit attorney who represents nonprofits in this way very specifically. And like, she does it like that. And I think I have trouble with me, right? With like my general broad, general transactional serving the latent legal market, like business model that I've come up with. But I feel like the lawyers who want to niche in a particular practice area, nonprofits, food law, medical providers, estate planning, you know, these are the types of things where I feel like they could get extreme value from what you're trying to coach me on right now. And I just think I'm an anomaly, and I just like to challenge the status quo far too much, Mark, for that.
So let me describe what you do slightly differently, if I may.
Okay. Yes, please.
You are entering or creating a brand new business model that may or may not take off really well. And if your business model takes off really well, then someone is going to take your business model and they're going to segment it down. So instead of going to Matthew for this generalist, why don't you come to me because you happen to be in the medical facility. I do the exact same thing, but I just focus on medical. Mm-hmm. Or why don't you come to me because I just focus on and pick your other fields, right? It doesn't matter. And so there could be niching in the same space you're in. It just doesn't happen today because no one's proven out the business model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's it. And I am very comfortable with, if I have more demand in one area, to niche down into that. I'm just still very much in the discovery phase. In fact, Robbie told me I should do the opposite. You should start very narrow and then broaden out from a narrow scope and see what else, what other. So like if you're doing estate plans and all your clients are closing on real estate, then you should also then branch into real estate. You know, that's something to do, right? So like that's like an example of what she was talking about.
Can I tell you that Robbie is very smart?
Yeah.
So here's, let me say what she just said, but I'm going to use slightly different words, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I want to come to you as a lawyer. And you say, I say, what do you do? And you go, I'm a lawyer. And I say, well, what kind of lawyer? And you're not anything, doesn't matter, right? I can do it all. Like, yeah, I don't believe you. Okay. And by the way, when I'm doing my Google searches, I'm never searching for generalist lawyer. Right. And yet when you say, look, I do real estate, I do, you know, estate planning, I do whatever it is, all of a sudden, oh, I'm looking for an estate planning lawyer. That's who I need. Now, what you might say, which I think fits what you've described to me so far, is I am a small business in-house attorney.
Yeah, I am. That is where I make most of my money too, is the fractional mm-hmm. in-house counsel. These are businesses who would never be large enough to hire a full-time in-house attorney. And if they do get that large, I'm probably no longer a good fit for them,
right.
Is probably what it is. And you know, that is, and I enjoy that because I'm a small business owner. And so I also am able to empathize with that small business owner. And I try to not be a hypocrite, Mark, because I also, like, my pitch to them is stop doing all your own legal work, right? Let me do that legal work. So that means I should be outsourcing some other things, right, for my own business as well, because I try to not be hypocritical. So let's thank you very much for the snippet of a coaching session. I'm sure with multiple sessions and some more deep dives, we could actually help me better pitch my solutions to people with problems that I could help them solve it. But if people want, let's now talk about more a little bit about like what you do. So you're the pricing expert. We've gotten into some of these things. On your website, you have great 5 reasons to hire Mark. So you're living, you know, you're making it very crystal clear. You're living what you're teaching. You're practicing what you preach. But why is it that like what is it like? What does a pricing expert do, really? In other words,
I hate that question. No offense, Matthew. I think most pricing experts are very different, and so a lot of pricing folks spend time figuring out how do I go set prices, and I've stopped doing that. I mean, it's part of what I do. But what I do mostly is help people figure out what's the value of your product. Because I think that's probably the biggest problem most companies have, is I don't understand how my customers value my products. And so then once you understand that, of course we can price better, but then we can pick a better pricing model, or we could do a better sales technique, or we could have better marketing, or we could build new products and a product portfolio that expands what it is that we're trying to sell to that marketplace. Mm-hmm. So I really spend most of my time helping people figure out what does value mean to their customers.
And that is, I do think that is something that lawyers do need a lot of help with. Even if they are staunch defenders of the billable hour, they still have a hard time selling that. And I think it's hard because they're billing their time. So if they could stop, it might be easier for someone like you to help them. And then you're also...
Well, so let me pause you for just a second.
Sure.
You know, we like to make fun of the billable hour. You're trying to kill it. I'm trying to kill it, right? I mean, I get all that. But a billable hour is just a pricing metric. one of the decisions all companies make is what do you charge for? Mm-hmm. So you've probably seen Google charges for ad clicks, right? Dropbox charges by how much storage you use. So there's tons. Netflix charges a monthly rate nowadays, but they used to charge by how many DVDs you could have. You buy go to McDonald's and they charge you by the hamburger. So everything has here's how I charge you. And so an hourly rate is just a pricing metric. It's just what we've chosen to use. And so we can still use that and create value, capture value, think about value, even if we don't want to give up that hourly billing. Although I got to say, giving up the hourly billing, there's much more profit in that.
I agree. I definitely agree with that. Even the low cost attorney can make more money because of the market opportunity there by not billing time. At least that's what I'm finding. There's nothing bad with being Walmart. Walmart makes a lot of money. There's a huge market for low cost. There's a huge part of the market that wants and needs low cost. And lawyers just are not playing in that space. And I'm trying to play in that space. You offer a lot of content out there. I'm a recent subscriber to Impact Pricing, the podcast, but there's also impactpricing.com. And so what is the difference? So first, explain a little bit about all that content that you have out there for people to listen to.
My first book I wrote, Entrepreneur Press published it, and they named the book Impact Pricing. And I thought that was a great name. So 4 years ago, I went out on my own again, and I launched my own company. And I was like, what am I going to call it? And I fell in love with the book name, Impact Pricing. So now I call my company Impact Pricing, and that's impactpricing.com. And everything I do is on impactpricing.com. And so that's really what you want to focus on if you want to follow my content. And that front page on impactpricing.com is just a screen of all of the most recent content we put out. And we put out probably 4 or 5 pieces of content a week, something like that.
There's also, I see under the free resources that you offer, a subscription growth calculator. So I know for attorneys, it might not have been designed for the legal profession per se, but is that something that you'd maybe recommend my listeners who are interested in moving into a subscription-based billing practice to try out that subscription growth calculator?
Possibly. Can I take a step back and talk about subscriptions for a moment?
Yes, please.
Because you and I have not talked about subscriptions much at all. My second book is called Win, Keep, Grow. And that book was targeted at subscription businesses. And what I love about that book is when I first started studying subscriptions, I had aha moment after aha moment at how subscriptions are different than traditional businesses. Mm-hmm. And that book really describes what are the differences. And the reason it's called what it's called is because we used to go from having to, I got to go win a new customer. Right. So if you imagine selling cars, I got to go win a new deal. I got to go win a new deal. I got to go win a new deal. When we go to subscriptions, though, we do have to go win customers. But when we win a customer, usually it's a much smaller revenue number for that month. But I get that revenue month after month after month. So we have to win the customer and we have to keep the customer. And when we get really good, then we learn how to grow that customer. Meaning I get that customer that used to give me $20 a month to now give me $50 a month. And the subscription growth calculator is really all about how much time and energy do you put into winning customers versus growing customers.
Super useful tool, I think. I think that can be an incredibly useful tool. So everybody, there'll be a link in the show notes, but impactpricing.com under the free resources tab. I think that makes a lot of sense. And that goes back to your good, better, best, but then you have options too, right? So certainly a subscriber could go from the good subscription to the better subscription to the best. They could increase their subscription level, but also options on top of that. So going back to that, what are some options potentially that they could look like?
I was actually going to take it a step further.
Let's do it. Please. You take the driver's seat, Mark, by all means. You're a podcast host too, so go for it.
There are four ways. I'm sorry. I'm going to take it two steps backwards. If you want to grow your company, there's only two ways to grow your company. You win new customers or you get your current customers to pay you more money. That's it. Right. And so if I want to grow my customers, I want to get my current customers to pay me more money. There's only four ways to do that. I can raise their prices, which by the way, is not as hard and scary as you imagine that it is. I can upsell them. meaning I get them to go from my good to my better, or my better to my best package, or I sell an option, something like that. I could cross-sell them, meaning I've got something else that's related, but it's not directly solving the same set of problems. So I could sell other products to them. And then the fourth one is called usage. And usage is, depending on what I've set for a pricing metric, as they use more of my product, I get paid more. So in your pricing that you already told me, it's $50 a page. So they, the more pages they submit to you, the more they pay you. So that's a usage model. So then how do I get them to use more of my product or use more of my service? And in software companies, the SaaS companies, they invented a new department called customer success. Mm-hmm. And customer success is all about watching how much do my customers use my product? Are they truly getting value out of my product? Can I coach them and hold their hand and help them get more and more value out of my product? Because the more value they get, the easier it is to upsell them, cross-sell them, the more they're going to use, and the more they'll stick around if I raise their price.
That is probably the most clippable section of the show to post to YouTube Shorts or something like that. Phenomenal. Incredible insight. Yes, yes. I think that, I mean, all of that can be applied to a productized legal service. I think. You mentioned how I'm doing the pages thing. And what I have found, and as we start to like wrap up the show a little bit here, what I found is, and there's a sports lawyer who does this for his market, but like, since I'm targeting kind of everyday people or small business owners who are price sensitive, my $20 a month pricing is actually very intentional. Netflix, Amazon Prime, you know, some of these lower cost gym memberships, you know, there are a lot of things around $20 a month. So now you could also get legal advice and access to other flat fee like services, the options. Because what does that $20 a month get you? It really just gets you like, I can answer quick legal questions, but usually there's a contract or there's something else. And there's like a lot more work to do when they're not afraid to contact me with questions for a price that they're already comfortable paying everything else. So in a way, I feel like I am getting paid to market to these people. That they will come to me now with their problems that I will then sell them options. And the $20 a month is really just a subscription to options. That's kind of what it is. And there's another attorney who does something like that, the sports lawyer, but his subscription pricing, he represents athletes who are not stars you've heard of. They're just on the bench, but they're still making, you know, mid six figures. And he's like, I start my subscription pricing at half a Range Rover payment or half a second apartment lease, right? Because like that's his market and they understand that pricing based on what they're also spending their money on. So what do you think about using pricing in as a strategy in that kind of a way?
I think it's very smart. And let me give you a company that does it better than you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Do you happen to have an Amazon Prime account?
I do.
You are paying Amazon money so that you can buy product from them.
Right. I know. They're an inspiration, truly, though.
Yes. Yes. So the idea that says you're paying me for something and it's locked you in or, you know, semi-locked you in or given me the advantage for all of the add-on business is a fabulous strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely borrowed from what Amazon is doing. I wish, like, because we have legal ethics and professional codes of conduct to comply with. Like, I wish I could do like the annual subscription paid up front for a small discount or whatever, but it's just really complicated with professional codes of conduct that it's just easier to do month to month. But another thing I found with month to month, and I am curious about what your opinion is on this, and I'm sure context matters, but my clients don't like they like not being locked in to anything more than month to month. And it makes me every single month have to make sure I'm delivering value to them. And also, if I don't like a client, it lets me get out of that relationship too. So I like month to month. And I don't know, even if I could do an annual subscription and give them like a discount, like the Amazon Prime pricing, I don't know if I would, because I've liked the month to month, but I'm still learning. So what do you think, Mark?
Yeah, I think offering both is my preferred technique. The reason I like both is, the month-to-month is exactly what you just said, right? Someone can try it easily. They can decide they want to leave anytime they want. It forces you to have a great product. It forces you to continue to give them value. So I love month-to-month. I also love the cash flow of the upfront payment. And so when I give a client a choice and they've already decided they like you, they're going to stick with you, then they pay you the annual fee and you're like, okay, great. I appreciate the cash flow.
Yeah. Yeah. With that, anything else that you think is worth mentioning on subscriptions as we start to round out the episode?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
No, that was great. No, we've covered some great ground here. I'm sure we could continue to unpack, and you do in the Impact Pricing Podcast. So I highly recommend everyone, you're already listening to this in a podcast app, just search Impact Pricing and you'll find Mark's podcast. What I like about Mark's podcast is he does just like 2-3 minute episodes, but then also has some longer interviews from time to time. So you might even see me borrowing from that strategy in the near future, because I really like just quick consumption of like a really useful, informative insight. Any other places that you want people to find you or reach out? LinkedIn is another great place that we got connected.
Yeah, I am on LinkedIn a lot. So feel free to link in with me there, follow me there, or ask me to connect. I'll connect with you. That's okay. Until I run out of connections, which I think is coming up. And then we didn't talk about my last book. I love my last book. And that one was called Selling Value. And Selling Value is really, if you want to start to understand how do your customers value your products, how do you communicate that to new potential customers? I think that's just I guess I wrote it, so I'm not allowed to say this, but I think that's a phenomenal book from that perspective.
And all the books are available on Amazon, speaking of Amazon. Okay, great. And they're on your website too. I see under what we offer tab. The last question, Mark, I like to ask all my guests is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
Oh my God. I would have to say, yes, it is a sandwich because it has two pieces of bread around a hunk of what some people call meat. I don't eat hot dogs.
All right. Definitely a unique answer. What some people call meat. I like it. So again, Mark, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Law Subscribed.
Thanks, Matthew. It was a lot of fun.
And that's our show. Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for being sponsors. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with somebody you think would find value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kurbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kurbis with Law Subscribed.